Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So in 2017, the New York Times posted a job listing that garnered more than 13,000 applicants, traveled to 52 top destinations around the globe over the 52 weeks of 2018, and write about them. So 1 year later, the chosen applicant has finished her stint. Maybe you've been following along with her. She's been leaf peeping in the mountains of South Korea, scuba diving in Fiji, dining on ant tacos in La Paz, Bolivia. It was described as a dream job. But in Jada Yuan's closing essay about the experience, she says the sometimes grueling challenges of travel, the logistics, the missed trains, the jet lag, the currency snafus, not to mention the journalistic deadlines, were just as memorable as the sites themselves. I know nobody's feeling sorry for her, and really she isn't feeling sorry for herself. It's just part of her story is that travel is complicated, and her article has seven lessons for people on the go doing actual travel, and we'll go down that list. Jada Yuan is the New York Times inaugural 52 Places traveler. Before that, she was an editor and writer for New York Magazine. Jada, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And I see
I'm
you're
excited.
I see you're on from Bangkok, Thailand. Is that place 53?
It is right now, yeah. I needed a transition period before I went back to New York because it's I have so many people who I want to hang out with, and I just sort of know myself. There's a lot of administrative work that has to be done before I'm actually done with this job. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be able to do that if I were back in New York right now.
And Bangkok is a particularly good place to dry out from this?
It was really happenstance. I had a couple of friends who'd planned a trip to Bangkok from Seattle, and we sort of put a marker down that we would meet up for New Year's Eve. And through the course of that, I reached out to a friend who works at the New York Times, who lives in Bangkok, and he came and joined me in Cambodia. And then now I'm hanging out with him and his girlfriend here in Cambodia, here in Bangkok, and just trying to decompress and do a lot of work that still needs to be done.
So how did you figure out the 52 locations? Can you give us a sense of how you compile the list? I see there is a total number of miles that you traveled, which is going to blow people's mind.
Yeah, well, so the list wasn't of my making whatsoever. The New York Times editors come up with that, and the list was determined before they knew who the traveler was going to be. So it was basically like, here's the list, go forth and try and figure it out.
Wow. You didn't get any input?
No, none whatsoever. I do think that last year's list was particularly designed for this sort of inaugural experiment of the 52 places, mm-hmm. That some person would be going on it. And so there was the idea that I would only go to warm weather destinations, and that did not turn out to be true because warm weather destinations are cold at certain times of the year. And in order to do the trip in a logical manner, I went through the Americas. So I went through the southern U.S., down through South America, up through the west coast of the U.S., across through Canada, and then sort of proceeded east across the world through Europe and Africa and Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, and then mm-hmm. up through Asia. But the timing of it didn't always coincide with when one would normally travel to those places. If you were taking a 2-week trip and you really wanted to to go see Rogue River, Oregon, which is sort of known for fly fishing and leisurely times on the river in July, you don't go in April. But that's when I was there. So
yeah, and I guess one could theoretically do an all warm weather trip, but then you'd never stray far from the equator. You write about how it took you until stop 5, Bogota, Colombia, to have your first breakdown, quote unquote, to think to yourself, I can't do this. What happened in Bogota?
I don't know if it's true that it took me that. I think I had my first breakdown in New Orleans, which was the first stop on the trip. So I was having breakdowns sort of all along the way, which is sort of how overwhelming the whole task was. And also just it was overwhelming in a number of senses, in that it was this huge opportunity and I really wanted to do a good job at it. But also there was a lot of scrutiny that I hadn't experienced as a writer at New York Magazine. New York Magazine is a small, I mean, it's got a large reach, but it's a sort of family run publication, and our readers sort of treat us like their friends, and mm-hmm. Times readers are more exacting, I would say, and also and more numerous. And it was a great sense of engagement. It started being really wonderful as the trip went on, just sort of the reach, but at the beginning it was a little hard. So in Bogota, what happened was the deadlines just started piling up on each other. And I was writing two articles and hadn't left the hotel room. And I had a 5-day trip, and I had spent 3 full days just inside the hotel. And I'm supposed to be going out and photographing the city and writing about it and giving my impression about it. And I couldn't figure out how that was going to be possible. And then I got in a cab. We went 30 minutes to a museum, and we got there, and it was maybe 2 hours before the museum closed, and I realized I'd left my wallet back at the hotel, and that we were going to have to go back. I had no money. I wasn't going to see this museum, and I was going to miss light time again for taking pictures, so I was going to have 1 day to see Bogota. And then I extended my trip there.
my guest, if you're just joining us, is Jada Yuan, who was the New York Times inaugural 52 Places traveler, going to 52 places in 2018 and writing about them. Anybody been reading Jada's stuff? Do you have a question? Do you have a travel question about lessons that she learned for even less ambitious travelers than going to 52 places in 52 weeks? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And your concluding article has these 7 lessons. Number 1 is a year is short, ha. Huh? And number 2 is know thy logistical self. And so many of your posts from this year focus on logistics, how to get from point A to point B. You missed trains in India, had trouble securing the necessary paperwork to rent a car in Japan. So were the planning logistics more intense than you anticipated? And are there lessons in there for more ordinary travelers?
Yeah, they were definitely more intense than I'd anticipated. But I think that my lesson for an ordinary traveler is plan as much as you feel is necessary for you to feel comfortable to go on that trip, but understand that things are going to go wrong. And the more flexible that you are, the better time you're going to have. If you are so nervous planning a trip that you sort of plan it down to the minute, you're going to sort of miss the times when you get to take a minute to go see a sunset. And when the train does go wrong in India and someone helps you out and you get someone's personal supply of paratha bread, like all of those things, the logistics will work themselves out. In most places, they work themselves out. And I think what I noticed was that I had to start following my own rhythms and just sort of listen to the fact that I don't like waking up really early for planes. So don't do it. Just don't do it. And that maybe, a lot of people say to only do carry-on luggage. And I just didn't really have that luxury because I had to carry so much gear and I was carting stuff around for a year. And I'm pared down. I'm pretty pared down, but I often checked a bag, and every once in a while the bag would get lost or it would take a while to come out on baggage claim. And that time became my time. Like, I got to check my phone. I got to sort of relax for a little bit and not think about anything except for the fact, like, when is my bag going to come out? So it was actually kind of calming.
Yeah.
You can see logistics as these points that you have to meet, or you can just see them as kind of a fun puzzle that you have to figure out. And I think that if you can see them as a fun puzzle, you'll have a calmer vacation. You don't have to get annoyed by everything. I think one of the things Ben, my friend in Bangkok, and I have been talking about it a lot is that traveling in the U.S. is more stressful than traveling anywhere else in the world.
Really?
And that, yeah, it really is. I had so many planes in Africa. I didn't go to that many planes in places in Africa, but the plane wouldn't show up. Like the time that the plane that I was supposed to take from, I think it was Libreville to Zambia, it just passed. Like the time that I was supposed to get on the plane just passed. No, there were no announcements. No one said anything. And everyone just said, okay, just wait. They'll come out eventually and tell you what's happening. And it was, I would choose that, I think, over a lot of travel experiences that I had in the U.S. where I think we're a little dehumanized as travelers there.
Let's take a phone call. Mari is calling from Switzerland, and I don't think we've ever gotten a call from Switzerland before on this show.
No,
hi, Mari.
No, but you've gotten a call from me before when I lived in Prague, where I also lived for 4 years.
Our informal European correspondent.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying you're our informal European correspondent. Go ahead, Mari.
There you go. And I did want to say, to confirm that your experience in Luzern, where you got your, I believe, your wallet back, totally characteristic of the Swiss. It's amazing. Was it your phone?
It was my computer.
Your computer, yeah. I mean, it's amazing how honest everybody is here. I actually was calling to say, first of all, that I loved your balance of planning and spontaneity, because I think we tend to either fall on one side or other of the spectrum. And I was also calling to put a wish out into the universe that maybe the New York Times can do a similar series in the future for either families or people with disabilities. I am the main travel planner for our family, and our daughter has a disability. And I think it would be great to have similar articles talking about how people with limited mobility can get around.
Yeah, I think that is actually, something is in the works on that. I've talked to Amy Vershup, the new travel editor, and she's definitely heard those concerns and wants to address them. There was a recent article, I think, that was really good about a woman traveling while blind that was just kind of great. and she was in an emergency exit and was being, I think, talked down to by the flight attendant and basically said that actually, you know, she'd be probably a really good asset if all the lights went out. And so, yeah, I think that we're going to be doing more of that.
Mari, thanks. Keep calling us from all kinds of places in Europe.
Okay, okay, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. And we'll continue with J.D. Yuan in a minute on the lessons that she learned while traveling to 52 places in 52 weeks for the New York Times. We'll get to lesson number 3, develop your superpower. Lesson number 5, learn what safe means to you, and more. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with J.D. Yuan, New York Times inaugural 52 places traveler, just completing 52 places in 52 weeks in 2018. Let me ask you about that lesson number 3 in your concluding article, develop your superpower. What's a travel superpower?
Well, I said this in the article, but mine is to fall asleep anywhere. And being able to sleep was probably the most important part of this job for me, I needed a lot of naps. And I just started listening to that as much as I possibly could, and took naps because my brain needed to function in order for me to be able to write, to get from one place to another, to not get sick. Sleep was really important. So just fall asleep any way you can was mine.
Well, I haven't traveled as extensively or for that long a period of time that I probably needed to develop one, but that's a good one to know. It can be as simple as taking a nap.
Yeah.
KK in White Plains, you're on WNYC with JDU on. Hi, KK.
Hi.
You have a question?
Hi.
I have my own travel story, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've taken time off repeatedly to travel. I took 13 months off right after finishing all my education. Then I took another 4 years, and it's taken me 54 years to go to 52 places. So I'm amazed that she could do 52 places in 1 year.
Do you have a travel superpower, KK?
The joy of travel is my superpower. I love to travel.
Were you? Thank you. Were you well traveled, Jada, before you did this? Is that why you got the job over the other 12,999 applicants?
Well, I certainly don't know why I got the job, and I never even asked. But I was traveled in that I had been places. I'd gone to visit a friend in Afghanistan. I have traveled for work. Doing film festivals and things like that. But I'd never taken a long trip like this before. The longest I did was 3 months in college and then in the U.S. and then 6 weeks after college. And so it had been about 20 years of just taking pretty short trips, always with work attached. And I think that at least I had to make up the reason why I got chosen. I knew that they knew that I could do the job because I had journalistic experience. But in my mind, I wanted to be a representative for people who work a lot, people who worked, who maybe like me. I decided not to take a year abroad in college, and I always thought that that opportunity would come up again, mm-hmm. and then it didn't. I never felt sort of secure financially to be able to take off that time, to be able to spend that amount of money to travel. I didn't know how you did it. And I wanted to be a voice for people who might think it's a little impossible for them because of those circumstances, and especially for women. Who were possibly afraid of traveling solo. I didn't really travel solo before this. I always went with groups of girlfriends. And I just encourage people to travel, because I think that once we get out of our little bubbles and see the world, just so much opens up and our perspectives change so much. I mean, I know that mine did throughout this trip.
What's coming to your mind right now as you say that, as like one, you know, biggest or one of the biggest unforgettable memories that changed how you see the world?
I mean, they were small moments. I think it was just really small things of people helping me and knowing that I could ask for help and be vulnerable in a public space. Because that's what, like when you're traveling by yourself, and especially when you're a woman traveling by yourself, just a lot of what I had to do was be like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me? And it's a scary feeling, especially, you know, I've lived in New York for a really long time and I have been attacked on the street in New York. And so I've had moments that make me a little wary, just sort of constantly mm-hmm. in public about strangers and things like that. And I had to rely on strangers this entire trip. And all I found was kindness. I mean, I had maybe like one incident that was a little mm-hmm. weird, but wasn't, mm-hmm. but I never felt like I was in danger. And I would say, like, I don't want to tell women travelers not to watch their backs, like you should, but there's also a way to watch your back and still keep yourself open to having real experiences.
Well, Jada Yuan, who was the New York Times inaugural 52 Places traveler, now done and drying out from the experience in Bangkok, from which we've had a really good line, better than we get to Brooklyn sometimes. So thank you for sharing all this with us. Let's talk again. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.